Chapter 30. The Breaking of the Line. The Gates Open. The Great Mother. Palace Outworks, Daylight Wall, Section 16, 15th of Quartus. Katsuhiro was running from the tunnel when Bastion 16 exploded. Flaming chunks of rockcrete rained down over that section of the battlefield, as deadly as any weapon. The outer lines were deserted, and with the Bastion gone, there was nothing to hold back the enemy. They poured over the shattered ground. Worse things were joining them, emerging from the smoke and fire to kill. Surrounded by flames, Katsuhiro did not see Angron fall from the sky, but he heard his call, and he saw the things the fallen Primarch summoned.
Father! I have come for you!
The word shook the world. Terror and fury swamped Katsuhiro's mind, leaving him fighting with himself. When the World Eaters came loping from the fire with their chainswords and set about their grisly work, cutting down men and hacking skulls from the dead and living alike, he ran harder. One saw him and came springing after him, the mass of the legionary's armor making the ground tremble even through the bombardment. Skulls bounced on chains from battle plate, whose white and blue livery was all but obscured by a thick coating of gore. In his warsuit, the Space Marine was far faster than Katsuhiro could ever hope to be, and ran at him, joints grinding, his chain axe gunning.
Blood!
The legionary shouted, so thickly he hardly spoke words.
Skulls!
Katsuhiro tripped, sprawling on the ground. He rolled over to see the monster leap at him, weapon lifted to sever his head from his spine. He threw up his hand. A loud bang, and a blast wave of superheated air thumped the wind from him. No axe fell. He looked up to see he was alone. Only when he scrambled to his feet did he find the Space Marines scattered in bubbling pieces across the ground. No time to think, no time to see. More World Eaters were bounding through the fires and the explosions. Brazen horns blew, drop pods slammed into the ground and released squads of legionaries. The siege towers ground on, and behind were the mortal hordes. All would kill him just as well, no matter their method. From the walls, death was flung indiscriminately. Away to the south, one of the great siege tower's shields failed. It caught fire and detonated, going up like a resin torch thrust into a fire. Seconds later, metal from its destruction rang down around him, missing him, but there were more towers, and there were more deaths for him. The red giant ran through the flames between the towers, his sword sweeping before him, slaughtering all he encountered. Guns rained every form of technological destruction down on him, but he was unharmed in the main, and what damage was inflicted was smoothed away, as if the wounds were washed off by the bloody rain.
Blood and skulls!
The giant howled.
Blood for the blood god!
He ran with lowered head towards a trio of tanks that had somehow survived the destruction. His horns connected with one, rocking it on its tracks. The giant pushed a hand beneath its treads and heaved it over. A point-blank shot from the main armament of its squadron mate made the giant reel and roar, but he seemed only enraged by the blow. The sword sang through the air. Katsuhiro gaped as it sliced cleanly through the hull, setting the metal alight with black fire. When the giant turned on the third tank, striding through a storm of bolts to ram his blade into its engine block, Katsuhiro ran again. Somehow, he avoided the myriad forms of extinction that sliced, blasted, and bludgeoned over the ruined outworks. Finally, he crested the ridge of broken ground the first line had become, the roaring of the winged giant echoing behind him. Through the tempests of fire, he beheld the grand portal of the Helios Gate. Little trace remained of the outwork fortifications there. The gate was only a few hundred meters away, but firmly closed. He stumbled towards it, all strength spent, not sure what he would do. If he approached, he would die under the enemy bombardment, and there was no way through in any case. Not far from the gate, one of the great siege towers was making its final approach to the wall. Between them, there was no hope. One more minute to breathe, he thought. One more moment to hear the pounding of his heart. That was all he could ask for. There were other soldiers converging on the Helios Gate, from all quarters. Scattered survivors, a small proportion of the conscripts sent out to fight, but numerous in terms of absolute numbers. Then a miracle occurred. Multi-throated horns sang orchestral warning cries. The great locking plates along the hinges of the gates clunked open, withdrew, and lifted back. Grinding debris to powder, the gates swung open, slowly at first, but then, as their enormous mass was bullied into moving, with surprising speed. Light flooded out from the open gate. Enemy weapons fire that had slammed into the portal was caught by a void shield spread over the arch. Figures, small as ants, formed up behind the sparkling aegis into firing lines. All were transhumans, their yellow armor golden in the city's light. Tanks and dreadnoughts supported them against the foe making for the gate.
"Loyal men and women of the Imperium,"
a greatly amplified voice boomed from the gates.
"Look now to your salvation. Make your way into the Emperor's protection. You have 3 minutes."
A cry of anguish went up from the fleeing soldiers. Exhausted as they were, they redoubled their efforts and fled through the field of death in hope of life. Daylight Wall, Helios Section, 15th of Quartus. Chain teeth growled past Raldoron's face with a hair's breadth to spare. He leaned back and slashed down with his power sword, cutting the axe head from the World Eater's weapon. It flew off, teeth still spinning. The traitor legionary slammed a fist into Raldoron's face, knocking his helmet into his cheek, and then grappled with him. Raldoron jammed his bolt pistol into the neck joint of his foe's armor and pulled the trigger, emptying the ammunition clip and blasting the World Eater's head from his body. He heaved the warrior's limp corpse away and moved on. Several dozen World Eaters were on the wall. More drop pods were screaming down from the sky. The last of the siege towers was approaching, now only dozens of meters off the rampart. The uppermost story was higher than the crenellations, its drawbridge held up on rusty chains the thickness of a titan's leg, and ready to drop. The size of it was ridiculous. It was so huge, it should not be. And yet it was. From a castellated firing deck atop, Death Guard fired down onto the wall. There was space within the tower for hundreds of legionaries. The difficulties the Blood Angels were experiencing would pale into insignificance if the siege tower made it all the way in. 3 had come out of the enemy camp. 2 were now ablaze out from the wall, brought down by the palace guns, but nothing, it seemed, could stop the 3rd. World Eaters reinforced the few Night Lords left on the rampart. They fought with astounding savagery, with no thought for tactics or self-preservation, but went berserk as soon as their dreadclaws snagged themselves on the crenellations. The Aegis had weakened to such an extent that drop pods were falling into the city now, slamming into hive spires and putting down in plazas. Not enough warriors made it through the air defences to take the palace on their own, but they cut bloody slaughter through soldier and civilian alike before they were taken down, diverting the reserves coming up to hold the wall top against the main assault. Mortis runes peeped for Raldoron's attention as warriors of the 1st and 4th companies died around him. Thane's weapons fire was diverted by the tower as his men engaged in a gun duel with the Death Guard riding it in. The World Eaters expended their lives in savage explosions of violence, taking 3 of Raldoron's men with them for every one slain.
"Finish them!" Raldoron voxed. "Get them off the wall!"
Behind him, another Dreadclaw hit the wall at a poor angle, ripping out several of the giant Merlons and ricocheting off. It hit the tower on the way down, losing half its mass to the shields cocooning the construction, and cartwheeled uncontrollably end over end towards the ground. The enemy surged around the tower base, certain it would reach its target. Mutants, traitors, abominations, readying to flood up its steps and into the palace after the Death Guard, their baying filtering up to Raldoron from all the way below. The ground was black with them, studded with fires from torches and burning effigies. Enfilading shots from the Helios Gate tore into them, slaughtering them by the dozen, but there were no big guns that could hit the tower itself, not at that range.
"Get them off the wall!" Raldoron repeated.
A World Eater came at him, his armour overpainted with gore. Chains bearing jawbones whipped around him. He was bareheaded, nothing but pure rage and hatred on his face, the tendrils of the butcher's nails buried deep into the back of his scalp. Ralderon shot him down, turning his skull into mist. The warrior dropped, blood pumping from his neck, fists beating at the rampart when his body hit the ground. To the south, loyalist reinforcements finally arrived, bolstering the thinning ranks of the Blood Angels coming from the direction of the broken Dawn Tower. Howls and battle cries filled the vox. Making any strategic sense of the situation was impossible. A lance strike punched through the Aegis several kilometres away, cutting down into a small spire behind the fortifications. The weapon burned through, slicing the building diagonally. It collapsed with the screech of tortured metal, the top part falling on the wall, crumpling as it hit and blocking the wall walk. Another World Eater came at him. Ralderon met his blow. Disruption lightning wreathed them both as his blade chopped off the legionary's arm. The traitor barely seemed to notice the amputation, but launched himself head first at the captain. Ralderon stepped to the side, letting the warrior throw himself onto the paving of the rampart, and stabbed him through the back. The blow obliterated the World Eater's power pack and the backplate beneath, leaving his spine exposed to the air. The first siege tower was mere metres away, and the rain was pouring down. Between the north and south forces of the Blood Angels, only three World Eaters remained. Then none, gunned down rapidly by the two lines of loyal legionaries meeting. Another drop pod speared towards the wall, retro thrusters burning to line it up for a perfect landing on the rampart. But as it was poised to cut out its jets and drop, guns within the palace blasted it to scrap, dropping its wreckage on the wall. "Form up!" bellowed Ralderon. He looked to the siege tower. Another few seconds and it would lower its bridge. Armoured loophole covers rattled up and banks of melter cutters extended, angled down. "Stand clear!" he said. "Two lines! Two facing lines!" Sergeants ordered squads over the gap between the groups of Blood Angels, bolstering Ralderon's depleted units. They jogged over an uneven ground of power-armoured corpses, Night Lords, World Eaters and Blood Angels intermingled, their rounded armour slippery with blood and treacherous underfoot. "Stand ready!" Ralderon called. "Stand ready!" The siege tower moved forward slower than he expected. It shuddered under fire and adjusted its course. A blaze of bolt rounds hammered from its roof, forcing the Blood Angels to duck down behind the crenellations, their return fire ineffectual owing to the angle. Ralderon took stock of his men. 300 left from two companies waited for the riders of the tower. A terrible stink came off the siege engine, of sickness and putrid wounds that he smelled even though his armour was void-sealed. More reinforcements were coming. Thane's men were running down from the gatehouse, more arriving from the north, and a sixth company of Blood Angels speeding along the road behind the defences. This was the risk. This siege tower. If they threw back this assault, the Helios section of the Daylight Wall would hold. "We will triumph," he told himself. "We are worthy." The trumpet chorus of the gate's warhorns snatched his attention from the siege tower. For the first time in centuries, he experienced dread. Not even the demonic horrors of Cygnus Prime had unnerved him. What he saw at the Helios Gate did. The gates were opening. They swung wide, pouring the pure lumen light of the city onto the field of battle. His heart pounded. If the gates were open, they were lost. "Thane! Thane!" he voxed. "The gates are opening! Angron is outside, Thane. On whose authority do the gates open? Are we betrayed?" There was a rush of air behind him, and the thump of boots upon the stone. He turned to see Sanguinius alight on the wall, sword drawn in his left hand, the spear of Telesto in his right, his golden armour running with the bloody downpour.
"The gates open on my authority, Captain."
Sanguinius strode to Ralderon's side.
"My lord, why?"
For one terrible moment, Ralderon doubted his genefather's loyalty and feared he had turned against the Imperium at the last. If that were so, the Death Guard were in ignorance, for they turned all their attention on the Great Angel. His armour sparked with bolt impacts, but he stood in contempt of their efforts, even his bare wings untouched, and spoke.
"My brother, the Khan, reminded me that we must not forget our ultimate duty. The Emperor works for mankind, but while I live, I will not forget the individual men and women who make up that whole. He swept his spear out over the ramparts. Tiny figures, pursued by all the horrors of Horus's mutant legions, were running for the gate, while Angron rampaged through friend and foe alike. I will not abandon the human troopers to this vile death, while some might be saved. In them I see bravery. I see loyalty. But above all, I see faith in my father's vision. I shall not let them die while there is blood in my body and strength in my limbs. Fear not, my son. The Imperial fists hold the arch, and even now allies come to their aid. Now prepare. The enemy comes against us, and we must look to our own task. The fire from the roof of the siege tower cut into the ranks of the Blood Angels. The melter arrays upon the front discharged, their beams agitating atoms to the point of destruction. A swathe of the downpour evaporated into meaty steam. The crenellations glowed red, then orange, then white, and collapsed into slag. Where the beams cut across the bodies of the fallen, flesh exploded. Ceramite resisted the arrays for mere seconds before collapsing into powder. The Blood Angels waited either side of the beam's tracks, now separated by a trench of molten rockcrete. Sanguinius stood unafraid in the storm of bolt impacts, unharmed while his sons were felled.
"We shall repel them," he said.
"My lord, I suppose my telling you to get off the wall will do no good," said Raldoron. "But I am honour-bound to say you should. We cannot lose you." Sanguinius laughed, a musical pure sound in the blood rain and the slaughter.
"You are right, my son. I would not leave you if I were sure it would be my end," he said.
Then he spoke the awful words Raldoron had heard so much of late.
"But I know I do not die today."
The gargantuan chains rattled. The siege tower's drawbridge fell forwards, rusty teeth in the underside biting into the softened fabric of the wall. The bolt gun fire from the top roared on. From within, a throng of Death Guard ran out, rasping their praise of Mortarion and their newfound god, and poured onto the battlement.
"For the Emperor!"
called Sanguinius, and led his sons into the fray. The Imperial fists shot with incredible discipline, killing traitor humans and monsters alike, yet avoiding the majority of the fleeing soldiery. The conscripts ran between their saviours, staggering into the safety of the city. Those that collapsed were lifted up and carried away. Katsuhiro fled towards the yellow line, not daring to look back. He heard the shouting of the enemy behind him and the bellowing of the red-winged giant. To his utter disbelief, he made it through the whistling bolts to the line of Imperial fists, was grabbed and dragged through. Guns all around the arch fired down. The Imperial fists swept the field clear. He dared not think himself safe and looked back, immediately regretting it. Through the legs of the legionaries, he saw that the giant was nearly upon them. He had abandoned his rampage and was making right for the open city gate. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands perhaps, of bolts impacted on him, blasting divots from his flesh, obscuring the greater part of him with the gathered flashes of small explosions. Lasbeams punched smoking holes deep into his body. Plasma streams scorched muscle from bone. He would not fall, but he was slowing, encountering some obstacle invisible to Katsuhiro, leaning into it like a man battling against a hurricane. The giant roared in frustration. Flesh boiled off him from an attack that had little to do with legionary weapons. Fire ran over his body. Katsuhiro's teeth ached. He tasted metal.
"Father!" roared the giant. "I will destroy you!"
But the giant went no further. Something was holding him back. A frantic stalemate was reached. The enemy died in droves at the threshold. Their demonic leader could make no more headway. More giants were required to tip the scales. The ground shook to steady beats, and Katsuhiro turned to look into the palace. To his amazement, a group of titans were advancing down the main road to the Helios Gate, green and red and white. They blew their war horns in outraged cries, lined up in the gate, steadied themselves on splayed feet, and powered their weapons. Katsuhiro was hustled beneath them,
enduring the soul-wrenching shock of passing through their void aegis. They sang their war songs once again, and the largest spoke. "The Emperor protects." It opened fire. Twinned cannons blasted volcano heat. Las weaponry of a scale that dumbfounded Katsuhiro cast double spears of hard light at the enemy horde. They both hit the raging giant, who was caught upon the cusp of entering the city, throwing him back and vaporized the greater part of his charging legion. The other titans opened up, warhorns still howling, blazing fury across the sky. The enemy streaming for the open gate were annihilated, the survivors retreating in disarray. Warhorns blared again, legs straightened, and the last of the Legio Solaria strode out of the Imperial Palace, weapons still firing. Sanguinius slew the Death Guard with such speed and power. All that came against him died. With blasts from his spear and the sweep of his great sword, he ended their treachery once and for all. He leapt from wall to drawbridge, knocking as many foes from the edge as he slaughtered directly. Then, having cleared a space, he leapt from the bridge, beat his wings, and flew up and round, landing upon the siege tower roof, and there lay about himself with his blade, bringing to an end the hail of fire that so troubled his sons. At the lip of the wall, the Blood Angels fought in a line against their fallen cousins, no quarter asked and none given. An equilibrium held there, the Blood Angels' fury matched by the Death Guard's tenacity. The 14th Legion were far more durable than Sanguinius's sons, taking blows and bolts that would have incapacitated other legionaries. But they were slow, bloated by sickness, disabled by infirmities. The Blood Angels moved with a grace that their counterparts could not match, and found hard to counter. Just as much stinking blood was spilled as pure legionary vitae, and the line held. Pushed at by the mass of warriors at their backs, Mortarion's diseased progeny fell from the sides of their ramp, but the thin barrier of red would not give. Sanguinius was captivated by the sight of his brave sons holding back the tide of the traitors. Such pride stirred in him at their sacrifice, such sorrow that he would behold their valour only a few more times before the final act of his life played out. Until that moment, he was safe. He could not die. He would not. That was his advantage. Time was running against them. The hordes of the enemy were converging on the tower. They would keep coming, brave in their madness, and no matter how many Raldoron and his warriors slew, eventually they would overcome the defenders. The tower had to fall. Aid was at hand. 5 towering walkers were making their way out from the gate. Sanguinius looked upon them from the siege tower. Many times the height of the war engines, the tower's very existence made a mockery of the laws of physics. No mortal engineer could build such a thing and expect it to hold up against gravity. But, he reminded himself, they fought the wars of gods now. And yet the mortal realm still had might of its own. "Great Mother, I am pleased you heeded my call," he voxed. "I salute you for overlooking factional division in the name of the greater cause. We will stand together in victory. This war construct at the walls, you wish it gone?" Esha Annie of the Legio Solaria responded. "Indeed," said Sanguinius. "The hour hangs on you." "Then stand clear," she said. In the command zilla of Luxor in Victoria, Esha Annie Mohana VI drew a bead upon her target. Her new augmetics troubled her, but they had certain advantages, bringing her closer to the roaring soul of the warlord through the holy unity of steel with flesh. Through his eyes, she saw the rear of the demon tower, where was mounted a gargantuan steam engine, meshed in fleshy sinew and powered by a furnace of damned souls. From the engine, great pistons led to the drive wheels of the tower. It idled, having done its purpose of bringing the tower to the wall. But she had another use for it. "Increase reactor to maximum output," she commanded. "Disengage failsafes. Remove limiting protocols. Stand by for core venting." In ordinary wars, her orders would have been rigorously questioned by the Titan's engine seers. Overpowering the plasma core of her god engine
carried a high chance of its destruction. But this was not an ordinary war. "Legio Solaria," she said, voxing the other Titans in her mongrel maniple, "we stand on the brink of annihilation once again. Let this not be the last action we undertake. Keep the enemy from me while I serve the Lord Sanguinius, and prepare for immediate retreat." Her mind meshed with that of her Titan. They had yet to know one another perfectly, she and Luxor in Victoria, but they held a common bond in their grief for Esher Annie's lost mother, and that made them strong together. His systems gave her insight into the abominable engine they faced, and his bold spirit picked out two sites for her, one for each of the Titan's volcano cannons, that would bring the damned thing low. Toxins rang, klaxons grated at her hearing. The soft alarms of the warlord's servitor clades whispered in her mind, their voices still human, though they had but one thing to say. Danger, danger, danger. Solaria was spotted. Punishing fire from the enemy contravallation zeroed in on them. Void indicators flickered with troubling portents of failure. She did not have much time. At Luxor in Victoria's knees, warhounds and reavers burned back enemy infantry and armour with plasma, flame and bullet. The enemy were so many. She could not fail. The whine of the reactor climbed. The great god engine trembled with barely contained power. More alarms pushed into her being, prodding at her soul through the manifold. Gauges slid into the red. Target locks screamed at her. The machine spirits of the volcano cannons begged for release. Still, she did not fire. She waited for maximum power, the very acme of destruction. Alarms shrilled. The moment came. "Legio Solaria, switch fire. All weapons to the siege tower now." Immediately, the god machines obeyed, swinging their great limbs to bear, and opened fire. The shields of the tower, weakened during its advance on the walls, finally collapsed under the pounding of the Titan's guns. "Loose," she said. Luxor in Victoria sighed with machine pleasure as its cannons were unleashed. Alarms screamed. An overbearing wailing resounded through the entire machine, promising imminent destruction. But she did not shut the energy stream off until the last. The giant lasbeams slammed into the tower engine, itself bigger than the warlord. They burned through warp-infused bronze, put out the hellish furnace. The Titan's reactor howled. "Dump all coolant. All Titans retreat to the Helios Gate." Clouds of superheated gas burst from the cannon's thermal vents, shrouding the maniple in pure white steam. Alarms still shrieking, still under heavy fire, Luxor in Victoria turned about as the demon tower's engine exploded. Scalding fluid blasted out in every direction. The tower shook, spilling the tiny figures of battling space marines from its broad ramp. Chained explosions raced up its many floors, blasting flames from its firing slits and windows. Magazines caught, energy sources detonated. Esher Annie did not see the tower's final demise. She wrestled with her Titan's desire to fight, while her tech clade brought down its internal temperatures until it arrived, still spraying scalding gas, back at the Helios Gate, and returned through the wall. The cannons hit the tower, shaking it from top to bottom. Sanguinius staggered. The Death Guard, coming up the main stairs to confront him, fell back. Sanguinius used the distraction to jump at them, incinerating them with his spear's energy cast, and took again to the air. "Retreat from the bridge, my sons!" Sanguinius shouted. He blasted down with the spear of Telesto directly into the melee, its strange energies leaving his own warriors unharmed, but turning the Death Guard into shattered husks of broken armour. "Fall back!" Raldoron said, passing on Sanguinius's order. "Fall back!" The Blood Angels gave way, and the Death Guard spilled from the drawbridge onto the ramparts. For a moment, the Sons of Mortarion were triumphant. They fired as they advanced, killing many of the retreating Blood Angels, before the illusion shattered along with the tower. The first explosion was so distant it was lost in the general roar of the battle,
But as those that came after sped upwards, the noise grew to deafening thunder, shaking the whole structure so that warriors fell screaming to their deaths, until the top half was obliterated in a fountain of green fire, and a tempest of shrapnel burst over the rampart, slaying warriors on both sides. A pressure built in Raldoron's head, and released again when a malevolent presence roared from the broken interior of the tower in a column of black flies. Glowing eyes stared down from the swarm's midst. Then the flies dissipated across the night sky, and the eyes faded away with a howl that made men vomit. Raldoron grabbed the standard from a dead banner-bearer and waved it over his head. The tattered flag snapped beneath the winged blood-drop finial.
"To me, sons of Sanguinius! To me!"
The Death Guard had taken the brunt of the explosion, but they were hardier than they had ever been, and some dozens of them were on the rampart. The Blood Angels rallied themselves for a hard fight, warriors again attacking from both sides and running up against a wall of rotting ceramite and iron will.
"The battle is almost won! Do not falter!" Raldoron shouted. "Cast them from the rampart! For the Emperor! For Sanguinius!"
Called down from on high by his name, Sanguinius, most perfect of all the Primarchs, hurtled into the middle of the Death Guard. His landing killed three even before he set his spear and sword whirling through them, cutting them down with contemptuous ease.
"To the Primarch! To the Primarch!"
Bolters and voices roaring, the two lines of Blood Angels crashed back onto the ruined section of the Wall Walk, slaughtering the traitors utterly, so that not one was left alive. Sanguinius swept his gaze over the battered remnants of the Blood Angels. He held aloft his spear.
"It is done!"
shouted Sanguinius, and his sons cheered him.
"My lord, look out!"
Raldoron pulled at his genefather's arm, but no space marine could move a Primarch. Angron was flying straight at them, wings beating, howling madly, black sword drawn back to strike. The Blood Angels opened fire. Bolts ricocheted from Angron's armor and his flesh without effect. But Sanguinius stood there and lowered his weapons.
"My lord!"
screamed Raldoron in anguish. "Do not fear. He cannot pass. The Emperor's ward is weakening, and soon the Neverborn will walk upon Terra. But for now, even Angron is forbidden entry to the palace." There was truth in Sanguinius's words. Angron spread his wings and came to a halt some way out from the wall. He swooped back and forth, his yellow eyes fixed upon his brother.
"Sanguinius," growled Angron, "face me. Let us fight, you and I."
"You shall not pass over these walls, nor under or through them, until our father decrees it," said Sanguinius. "You know this to be true."
Angron snarled.
"Then come out and fight me, Red Angel to Red Angel, upon this field of battle where father can no longer interfere."
Sanguinius saluted his brother as if Angron remained the troubled warrior of before.
"We will fight, my brother,
but not today." Angron roared and wheeled around, but he must have seen the truth of the Great Angel's words, for he did not attempt to pass over the wall, and flew back to the burning plains below, where the last unfortunate few of the outwork's defenders were being hunted down. Sanguinius stood at the edge of the ruined wall section. The crenellations had been entirely stripped away by the melter arrays, and the rampart cratered deeply. The wrecked stump of the siege tower burned some distance down. He looked out over Horus's hordes, mutants and traitor space marines, held up his sword and shouted,
"None of you shall pass within," he told them. "You shall all perish. This is the judgment of the Emperor. Remember these words, for they shall haunt you when the moment of your death comes and you learn to regret your treachery."
He turned away from it all. "Remove the corpses, Raldoron. Burn the Death Guard and throw the ashes over the wall. Have the Librarius check for warp taint. Mortarion's sons have strange new gifts." "My lord," said Raldoron. "And rest while you can." Sanguinius looked to the heavens. "They will try again and again. The veil between worlds weakens. The Neverborn are coming."
Ralderon's genesire had no further words for him, but leapt skywards and passed as a flashing mote of gold and white feathers towards the palace centre. Ralderon looked out over the zone of battle atop the wall. The apothecaries and engineers had much work to do. Dozens of blood angels were dead or dying. The wall was badly damaged. The place where the outworks had sheltered the wall's feet was covered over by the servants of the enemy. As his men worked through long hours to set things right, reports finally came in from Bab Command. At every point, the enemy's escalade had failed. The walls held. The attack was over. Titans swayed through the Helios Gate, their ponderous footfalls shaking the ground. Again, the voids slipped over Katsuhiro, making him sick to his soul. The Legio Solaria hooted a mournful salute to the fallen as the last came in. Still firing into the enemy, who would not give up their suicidal attempt on the gate, the Sons of Dawn fell back, covered by their tanks and the guns of the walls.
"Close the gates!"
the cry went up, taken up by others. 3 minutes. That was what they had been offered. That was all that was given. Katsuhiro saw desperate men sprinting for the gateway. 3 minutes was a lifetime quickly spent. Once more, the gate's array of war horns blared out their tune, the palace itself giving a valediction for the dead. The ground thrummed with powerful motors, and the gates swung inwards. A last few conscripts sprinted through as they swung closed. Katsuhiro tried to go to them, but he was pulled away from the gate by shouting people he could barely hear. Hands pulled him onto a low cot at the edge of the great canyon way behind the wall. There, Medicaid personnel performed triage on a group of filthy, shell-shocked soldiers. Many thousands had manned the outworks in their section. Katsuhiro reckoned there to be less than 1,000 left. The Imperial fists in the gateway altered their formation to intensify their firing through the gap of the closing portal. It shrank with increasing rapidity. Guns fired nearby. A group of legionaries festooned with skulls ran at the rear of the gates from within the city and were cut down by bolter fire from loyal space marines, who turned around on the spot and smoothly switched targets. The Titans sang again as they moved off into the palace. He watched them go. They moved so quickly, despite their plodding pace. Then the gates swung closed with a boom, shutting out the battle and the horrors beyond the wall, drawing his attention back. Katsuhiro stared at the rear of the closed gates. Transhumans moved all around the square behind the gatehouse. Now combat was done, they went about rearmament and repair without the post-combat shock lesser humans experienced. A captain of their kind walked by, shouting orders from his voxmeter.
"Please, my lord,"
Katsuhiro said, reaching up his hands. He expected to be ignored, but the captain stopped at his cot and looked down on him.
"Why did you save us?"
Katsuhiro asked. As the space marine wore his helmet, Katsuhiro could not gauge his expression. Green eye lenses stared at him hard, so soullessly he regretted speaking.
"We were ordered to," said the space marine.
"Then you think it a waste of resources?"
Katsuhiro said.
"I do not blame you. I am a coward. Every time I think I have overcome my fear, then some fresh horror is revealed, and I am a coward all over again. The city was put in danger for our sake. I'm sorry."
The space marine lord stared down at him. He was so tall, so distant, the last bits of his humanity hidden behind the angled mask of his warplate. And when he spoke, his voice was near robotic thanks to the voxmeter. And yet Katsuhiro heard his compassion, even through all of that.
"Hear me, son of Terra. Not one of you who fought upon those lines is a coward. You did what was asked of you. You performed your duty. I am proud to call you my comrade in arms, whatever the cost in blood and the risk of bringing you within these walls. This I, Maximus Thane, swear to you. Now rest. You will be needed again."
The space marine walked away. A Medicaid orderly came to Katsuhiro and pushed him gently onto the cot. But Katsuhiro saw something behind Thane's huge yellow bulk that made him sit up.
That man! That man, stop him!
That's the commander of the gate, the medike muttered to his attendants. Delirious, battle shock. Administer somna vapor. A soft plastic mask was pulled over Katsuhiro's face. He struggled against the hands pushing him down. Gas hissed down tubes beaded with condensation. Thane moved on, calling to his men, revealing Ashul at the edge of a crowd. The man Katsuhiro had known as Doromek, the traitor.
Stop him! Stop him!
Katsuhiro muttered, already losing consciousness. Ashul saluted ironically. Katsuhiro's eyes slid shut. He forced them open one more time, but Ashul was gone. Hissing filled the world, and Katsuhiro fell into welcome, dreamless sleep.